This is J. Lewis Mills, and you are about to be put on the level with J. Lewis Mills. Whether it's truth, controversy, good news, or bad. If it offends you, I'm sorry. If you agree, that's great. We talk about it all here because everything needs to be put on the level. Come in and join the conversation. I promise you'll be glad you did. To you all, however you all been. I hope you've been well, and I hope you've had a good week. I want to first say I sincerely apologize about the late start. There was a bit of a technical difficulty that we had to handle before we could begin, so I do apologize for that. As I said, I hope you all had a great week. I had a phenomenal week. I had a phenomenal experience. I was able to go and speak at two different events. One was a corporate event, and the other was more so like an inspirational workshop. And I'm going to actually do a show in a couple of weeks talking about it in depth. But I just want to say it was such a life-changing, life-moving, life-evolving journey that I was on. I'm very grateful for it. I am humbled completely by it. And as I said, in a couple of weeks, I'll do a show about it and get more into it. But for this evening, I have a friend of mine that I wanted to come on and have a pretty specific conversation with. She is a life coach. She is also an author, an international best-selling author. She has written two books so far and is working on her third. Her first one was Odyssey, From Victim to Victory. And her second book was Orgasm for Life. We will absolutely get into talking about her books and how she came about writing them. But I would first like to welcome to On the Level with J. Lewis Mills, Ms. Jennifer Elizabeth Masters. Ms. Masters, how are you doing? And thank you for joining me this evening.
Well, thank you for having me, J. Lewis. I am delighted to be here tonight. Thank you.
Thank you very much for it. So let's just dive right in. I would really like to know about you first. I like to set a base for my listeners so they know who they're speaking to, so or listening to. By the way, you can call in if you wanted to. The number to call is 1-888-429-5471. Again, that's 1-888-429-5471. But if you could just tell my listeners about you, about growing up, your life growing up, and just your journey so far up to this point.
Okay. Well, I was born in Toronto, Ontario. I'm Canadian. And I was the only daughter to my parents. And I have three brothers. Two of them were policemen in Toronto. And I have a little brother who is about 4 years younger than me. But I had, like most people, a dysfunctional family. And my mother had borderline personality disorder. And my father had a lot of anger. And I am pretty confident, I know for a fact that my mother had molestation in her family for who knows how many generations. And I'm pretty confident my father did too. He hopped a freight train. I'm sorry.
Was your mother taking any type of medication for the mental illness that she had? Did she accept it? Did she embrace it? Or did she act like she didn't have a mental illness?
She did not have a problem, according to her.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. She did go for psychotherapy one time, and because she cried, she rejected it. She didn't want to cry. So, that was a real challenge because she had very low self-esteem. She was an orphan at five. My dad hopped a freight train at seven. So, you know, a seven-year-old hopping a freight train in Toronto going all the way to Vancouver, you know, I've been really kind of contemplating that fact for some time. You know, something had to have been happening in his household. He never talked about it, which is quite common when men have sexual molestation. But for me, I had trauma for many years, and I had a brother that would climb into my bed. I didn't feel safe for many years, and he was not the only one. But it's interesting because I think when you have one sexual trauma, then you have a neon sign on your face that says, abuse me. And I had that neon sign on my face for quite a few years because I've been married and divorced four times. I've experienced all manners of abuse, and my last husband was in the closet gay, and I had no idea.
Wow. What did when the molestation went on with you, what did your parents do about it, or who did you tell? How did you handle it?
Well, the first incident was a neighbor down the street, and my mother basically swept it under the rug. And that was the way my parents handled most things in our household. We swept them under the rug, and eventually, you know, that pile gets pretty darn large. And
what is your relationship? What is your relationship today with your brother?
Well, we speak, you know, I've forgiven him totally, and I've told him that I forgive him, and he cannot forgive himself. He is an alcoholic, and he has to drink to go to sleep. He says his demons are pretty large.
How difficult was it for you to forgive your brother?
Not that difficult, actually, because I had done so much work by the time that I did forgiveness with him. I recognized that he was molested too, even though he didn't tell me. Because teenagers don't molest another child unless they've been molested. They have got to be taught. And so I knew he'd had trauma too.
Was it, I hope this is a fair question, but was it easier or more difficult to forgive someone that this transpired with that was outside of the home versus your brother? Or is the forgiveness, you know, just an equal thing in any circumstance?
That's a really good question, Jay Lewis. You know, it was easier to forgive my brother because I really loved him. You know, he's my brother. Than the neighbor down the street. I had a harder time. And, you know, it's interesting, when I was getting married, my mother wanted to invite the neighbor to the wedding. And I said, are you kidding me? So she acted like nothing ever happened. And I will say, you know, my mother is still living. She's 96 now and quite healthy and active. And but she's been blaming me for ruining my brother's life for many years. So she saw me as the perpetrator, which this is the problem that often happens.
Does she know the story of what happened, or does she just assume she knows what happened?
I think she was unable to see and hear. And this year, we actually had a breakthrough where I did some work in the Akashic Records with my mother, healing my relationship with her, healing her health and that sort of thing. And when I did that, all of a sudden, she called me to ask me what was wrong. I had just been visiting her, and it's interesting because she said, you know, when your brother and you had your little thing, so she acted like I was complicit, which I absolutely was not. And so when she called me the day I did this work in the Akashic Records, it was within 2 hours of me doing this process where I healed my relationship with my mother from the womb, and she called me. We cried together, and she, for the first time, recognized that she had ignored it, had not seen it, didn't recognize it, didn't know it happened. It was the strangest thing. It's like she was totally oblivious.
Was that in any way validating for you?
Well, it was huge. And I'll tell you, I don't think I've ever cried so much. I cried all that day. We got off the phone. I knew that she was crying. She cried all that day. So for all these years, you know, I'm now in my 60s, she did not recognize it. In that moment, everything changed for me.
How much of an impact did being molested on any level by someone outside of your family or someone inside of your family, how much of an impact did that have on not only the rest of your life, but you yourself being a parent?
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, that's a pretty deep question. I will tell you that what I did was I viewed myself as a victim. I had some hatred towards men. And of course, you know, my mother had imprinted me with men only want one thing program. Mm-hmm. And so I kept attracting men that would victimize me. They would either cheat on me, they would abuse me, and each relationship got worse. I attracted alcoholics, I attracted narcissists, I just attracted, you know, people that were emotionally unavailable. And I didn't even realize. So I felt like a victim, so I was victimized. And until I shifted that, I continued to do so. And when I shifted that and stopped thinking of myself as a victim, and I recognized, you know, this is a hard thing for people to hear. But, you know, we contract with our guides and our soul group before we incarnate to have tough things happen to us so that we will evolve. You know, if I hadn't had those experiences, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing today. I wouldn't have written the books. I wouldn't have, you know, become a life coach and help other women heal trauma. I wouldn't be who I am.
Do you have any, now that you are in this new place, spiritually, emotionally, and physically, do you have any, you know, they say hindsight is 20/20. Do you have any recognition to why you think you were attracting, in your words, the wrong men?
Well, yes. It was because I was vibrating as a victim. Like I said, it was like I had this neon sign on my forehead, abuse me, victimize me, hurt me, because I didn't love myself. I didn't accept myself. And I had so much hatred, self-loathing, and shame that, you know, I was just really small energetically. I felt small. I felt broken.
What was it that made you want to make the change? What was the proverbial straw that broke the camel's back for you? And how difficult was it for you to make the hard change and start making the tough decisions and going through the sacrifices that you had to?
Well, I was physically sick. I had sinus infections, bladder infections, fibromyalgia. I was depressed. I was anxious. I was angry. I had conflict in my outer world. I attracted conflict. So basically my life was in the crapper in so many ways. And so it was the pain, the suffering, the fact that I was so sick. I just decided I want something different. I want a better life. And it was the pain that drove me to make the change.
Okay. And what was that process for you? What were the first things that you did in order to try and spark the change in your life? How did that happen?
Well, I was going to doctors quite a lot to try and get to the root of the issues. And I had a doctor tell me that I read too much because I would ask him lots and lots of questions. And I rejected him. And I rejected his diagnosis saying, well, you'll never get over this. And when he said that to me, I was so determined to make him wrong and to heal all this stuff. I read Louise Hay's book. I read Toxic Parenting. I read everything I could possibly get my hands on about self-healing. And I worked the program. I had addictions. I healed the addictions. And I did them without like an AA. I did it myself by loving me. All addictions come from rejection of the self. And so when we start to love ourselves, and I did that just gradually, I started taking responsibility. The first thing was for my health. Instead of putting my health in a doctor's hands, I decided I'm going to do everything in my power to get healthy. And I changed the way I thought.
That's interesting. And the reason I say it's interesting. So within you, the want to change was, would you say the want to change was the strongest thing that drove your change?
Well, yeah, my desire to want something better. When I was 16, I remember reading the book Siddhartha, and it's the story about Buddha. And
yes.
Buddha became enlightened. And I read that, and that was when I knew something better was out there, that we were meant to do something other than go to school, get a job, get married, have kids, and die. I knew there was something better. And so when I made the determination I wanted to be healthy and well and happy, I was so driven. I worked and worked and worked. If I got a sinus infection, I read in Louise Hay's book, What Causes It? And that comes from repressed crying and feeling like we don't have a right to anger. And so that was the other thing. I had such rage, but it was stuffed inside me. And I had people tell me over and over again, well, you have anger. And I was like, no, I don't. But I kept attracting angry men. And so we attract what we are. And when I recognized that I was attracting what I was, it was like, wow, holy cow, I'm the one that can change all this.
Yeah, and that's a very powerful realization, in my opinion, to come to realize you yourself have the power to change whatever it is that's going on. You don't have to deal with, and you don't have to put up with. I believe people put up with stuff for just so long, and then when they can't deal with it anymore, that's when their level of change comes. When it comes to you said that you were married four times, and you said that each situation was worse than the last. So being as how it was that way for you, when you first saw problems coming in your second, third, or fourth marriage, did you just kind of emotionally and mentally check out of the marriage then and just stay in it? Were you in it till the end? Or once you saw a problem, you said, okay, I've seen this movie before. It's time to move on.
Well, I was stubborn as a mule. And
okay.
And kind of a slow learner. So, it took me, it really took me to my third marriage to recognize that I was a common denominator. And, when I sat on my couch and I asked and prayed for answers, please help me. What is this problem? What is the source of the problem? And I got a download, that this chart, relationship matrix, put the names of the partners you've had on the left and what happened in the relationship across the top, and look and see what are the common denominators. And because they were all sort of different, but yes, each one got worse. But when I looked at the chart, I realized I was the only one that I could blame for the failures. And it was so much easier and more fun to blame somebody else. Sure. But when I had to say no, it's me. It's me. And I had to lovingly accept it rather than beat myself up. That's the thing, is that so often we look at the past and we have such regret. We have to let go of that regret because it's negative and it drags
us
down.
Was that a hard pill to swallow?
Well, yeah. It was a lot more fun blaming everybody else. You know, I didn't have to take responsibility for my own part in it. So yes, it was a hard thing to do. But when I forgave myself, it just all dissolved.
Okay. You are listening to On the Level with J. Lewis Mills. My guest tonight is Jennifer Elizabeth Masters. If you have any questions or comments for me or Jennifer, you can call in at 1-888-429-5471. That is 1-888-429-5471. You said that in your last marriage, Jennifer, your husband was in the closet. How long was your marriage, and how did you come to the conclusion that your husband was really homosexual, but I guess basically used you as a beard?
Yeah, my daughter and I just had this conversation recently. Mm-hmm. My daughter didn't like him right off the bat, and she kept saying to me, "Isn't he gay? Isn't he gay? Isn't he gay?"
And how old is your daughter? I'm sorry. How old is your daughter?
She's 22 now, but she was 15 at the time. 15.
Okay.
14, I guess, when I met him.
Okay.
So she saw something I didn't. And, you know, I fell in love with him. He was there were qualities that he had that I really loved. And I, for the first time, now I'm going to answer a question that you asked me earlier about checking out. Mm-hmm. In my previous relationships, I always had one foot in and one foot out. I never was all in until this marriage. And it could be said that this was something I needed to learn, how it felt for me to be cheated on, for me to be rejected by someone else, because in the past it had been me doing the rejecting, me doing the leaving. So when he had affairs, and I recognized, you know, pretty early on, it only took 6 months for me to see the patterns and the issues. And he didn't want to have sex with me. And, I mean, I won't go into the details, but there were signs prior to that.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I mean, it really hurt to be rejected. It was very painful.
How long after you, I think you said in the plural sense, affairs. So after you found out about, now we're talking about your fourth husband. After you found out about his first affair, did you stay in your relationship because you felt what you just said before it was you, and now you needed to know what it felt like, and you thought that this was just the universe evening the playing field?
I gave him the opportunity, mm-hmm. you know, to choose. Do you want to be in this relationship or not? And I think that was before I was really 100% certain about, because he never admitted it. He didn't admit to the affairs either. But it would take me too long to explain how I knew, but I'm very intuitive. And so it's really hard for someone to hide something like that from me. And
does he admit it today? Does he admit it now?
Well, we don't speak. Actually, I felt like our karma was just completely finished. And so he got, it's funny because on the day of the divorce, he parked right in front of the courthouse, and he had a van. He parked right in front of the courthouse in a no parking zone, and his van was impounded, which is kind of funny. But so we walked out and he was like, "Where's my van?" And I said, "Well, I'll drive you to the impound lot." So that's how we ended it. It was on, you know, a friendly note, but there was no more to say. There was no more to do. There was nothing, no stone left unturned. It was done.
If he were to, since you and he haven't spoken, if he were to contact you tomorrow, and he were to say, he were to come clean about basically things you already know, but he would just say, you know, there's a lot that I need to get off my chest, and he were to reveal himself to you, would that help you in any way? Would that be any validation for you? Or would that just be you just letting him vent, so to speak?
Right. I'm good. You know, I'm good. I learned valuable lessons from the relationship. I had the opportunity to feel what it felt like to be rejected. And it's not a nice feeling. And I feel like that was my gift and my lesson. So him doing anything at this point wouldn't be any value added for me. It would be just for him.
Okay. Now, the name of your first book is Odyssey, Victim to Victory. What is Odyssey about? How long did it take you to write it? And how much of your personal journey is within the pages of that book?
Well, that book is about my life, and it took you all the way through from my childhood to 2011 when I had an awakening. And there's a lot of my life in there.
What made you decide to write this book? Did you write it for your own therapy, or did you write it because you started out wanting to help people?
Well, actually, I rejected the book. I had been guided for over 20 years, write the book, write the book, write the book. And I knew they wanted me, my guides wanted me to write a book on molestation, my story. And I couldn't understand why would this help anyone? Who's going to want to read it is what my thoughts were. But finally, I realized that this was the core of what I needed to do. So I wrote the book. And it ended up being quite cathartic for me. And for a lot of it, I couldn't remember things. And so I would sit, you know, I read the Akashic Records. So I would sit and I would ask, what happened here? Mm-hmm. And I would see a movie play out like in my my mind, mm-hmm. like just like seeing a YouTube video.
Now, I did, I unfortunately didn't finish all of Odyssey, but I did want to ask you about something that I read in Chapter 11, which was called Awakening. You wrote in there, and, you know, if you could kind of explain to my listeners what you mean by guides as well, but you wrote in there about how you learned how to listen to the wind. Did you learn how to listen to nature? And you were told by, I'm sorry, Jennifer, I don't remember if you said you were told by the wind or you were told by the trees to move a truck and a trailer. And I think by the time you got back, 3 of the 100-year-old trees had fallen. So if you could just kind of go into what that whole situation was, as well as what do you mean by you can hear, or the wind or the trees or what have you speaks to you and you hear what is being said?
Well, when we I guess we open to hearing the consciousness, like there's everything has a consciousness. Animals do, trees do, plants do. And, you know, I became a master gardener in Georgia. This was, gosh, way back to 1998 or 99, I think it was. I became a master gardener. And trees used to call me, you know, that I would get a call from someone and the trees would talk to me. You know, they needed help. So, you know, if we talk to them, they talk to us. It's amazing. The moon has talked to me. I know I sound like a crazy person, but I would love to share the story about the moon. But So when I got this message, so I was about to go to North Georgia. I was climbing into my other vehicle, and I heard in a like loud, booming voice, "Move your truck and trailer." And now this voice, to me, feels like God. I have guides. We all have guides, and our guides and angels can give us messages if we're open to receive them. But this was a booming voice, "Do this now." And to me, the way this voice came across, it was the voice of God. And so I had parked my truck and trailer under the trees. I had just brought a load of firewood home. And so I listened. That voice was one that I couldn't ignore. I felt like it would be wrong to ignore it. So I moved my truck and trailer, and I pulled it behind the back of my house away from those trees. And as I got out and closed the door, I said, "Is this good enough?" And I heard, "We can work with this," or "We can work with it." When I came home, I parked my Honda in the driveway. And this is a 7-acre property with a 100-year-old farmhouse and these beautiful, big old 100-year-old trees. And when I started to walk up the driveway, I could see branches where there shouldn't have been branches. There were no trees there. And as I rounded the corner behind the house, it was devastation. There had been gale force winds. The one tree had gone through the roof, and one limb, this 70-foot limb, had fallen right alongside, parallel to my truck and trailer, inches away, but never touched it.
Wow.
Yeah.
So when you say you heard a voice, is it a situation where you heard a voice in your head, or you heard a voice out in the atmosphere, out in the outside?
In my head.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But it was loud, really, like. It was there when somebody asked me, "How do you know it was the voice of God?" Well, I've heard other voices in my head, and doctors could say, "Well, geez, it's because you're schizophrenic." Well, no, I know I'm not schizophrenic, but those voices are different. They're like the still voice. But this was such a firm, powerful voice. It like that of a very strong parent, loving but strong. It was really strong. When I was 21, I heard my name called, and it was the same sort of thing. I thought I heard it outside, and I was visiting my parents. They had a 10-acre property, and I was way at the back. And so I dashed because I thought something had happened to my dad. I thought my dad had called me. And he said, "No, I didn't call you." And I thought he was kidding. So feel like that voice when I was 21, I didn't believe in God at the time. And I feel like it was my, kind of come to Jesus, wake up.
Now, you also have spoken about these guides that you have. What exactly are your guides, and how long have you been, how long have you felt as though you were open enough to hear them or communicate with them, and how extensive is your communication with them?
Well, now it's like a conversation. I ask a question, I get an answer. I ask about something. Now, if I'm multitasking or I have music on or somebody else is talking to me, although when I'm in my sessions with my clients, they could be speaking, I hear things and I feel things and I hear direction. I'm given guidance on what to do for people and that sort of thing. So it is a conversation and it's happening constantly. I will be out in, let's say, shopping somewhere, even in Walmart every once in a while. I had a man lit up. He had like a halo around him. And this happens when I'm supposed to talk to someone. And this man that I spoke to in Walmart, it's interesting because we crossed paths twice. And finally I said, "Are you okay?" And he said, "Yes, I'm fine." I said, "Well, I sense that you have pain. You have pain in your legs. You have pain in your back. And you're very sad." And I said, "You've been unhappy for a long time." And I said, "I have a message for you. That love is coming for you, and it's coming soon." Well, 5 years later, he called me. It was just a couple months ago. And he and his girlfriend are on my Facebook page. He called to thank me because the words I told him changed his life. And within just a couple of months, he met the woman that he's with today, and mm-hmm. he had given up on love.
Was he on your Facebook page previous to you running against him at the Walmart, or your interaction at Walmart was so strong that you all became friends on Facebook?
What happened was 5 years after I met him at Walmart, he called me to thank me. He said, "The words you said to me 5 years ago changed my life."
How did he know who you were and how to call you?
I gave him a business card, and okay. apparently he tucked the business card away. And the reason it took him 5 years was he opened this book where he put the business card, and there was my card. And so he called me.
Okay. Wow.
I know.
Wow. That's pretty interesting. Do you and he now have a steady friendship?
Well, I'm actually more in touch with his companion. Yeah, his mm-hmm. girlfriend. Okay. And I've done work with her mom. And yes, I've met her in person. And I have, since then talked to him on the phone. And yeah, he said I absolutely changed his life. He had had cancer and he had totally given up on love. He didn't have children and he wanted children. And Brandy, his name is Joe, and Brandy has children, and they're like his own. And he's happy, so happy.
This kind of helps me segue into the conversation that I wanted to have with you about being a life coach. How did that part of your journey come up for you, and how long have you been a life coach to people for?
Well, I became a life coach in 2011, but prior to that, in 1998, after having a hypnotherapy session, I don't know how to explain this, but there is dark energy, and I recognized
sure.
I had dark energy. I had a demon on me. I knew I did. And it was telling me to do things to hurt myself. And so this particular day, I said, that's it. I've got to go find help. So I sought out a hypnotherapist in Atlanta where I was living. I went and saw him. I had an exorcism, and it changed my life. And I said, you know what? I want to study with you. And me asking to study with him, he created a school for hypnotherapy. And so I became a hypnotherapist in 1998, and I started doing it alongside of my landscape business. And then eventually, 2007, I started doing energy healing. I'd taken a course on it, two courses on it. And then in 2010, I went to Bali and learned how to channel and read the Akashic Records. And that, I had been to India 2 years before that, mm-hmm. but those two trips, the India and Bali trip, opened me up. And learning how to read the Akashic Records, that is when the conversation really started, where I could hear and ask, and it's like a relationship, like telephone. I call my guides, "Hey guys, can you help me with this?" And mm-hmm. I ask questions. Yes.
I didn't want to cut you. I didn't want to interrupt you, But I do want to kind of go back a little bit to where you were in Atlanta and you went and saw a hypnotherapist, and you said that you had an exorcism.
Yes.
Can you just explain that? Because when I think exorcism, mm-hmm. I automatically think of the movie The Exorcist. So I completely understand that it wasn't something that was that dramatic. But what did this exorcism entail? And was it more of a clearing versus an exorcism? Because doesn't a member of clergy have to be present at an exorcism?
No, because I do the same thing now. I remove demonics and dark energies from people, although I am an ordained minister. But I'm trying to think if he is. His name's Dr. Skillis, and I think he's nearly 90 now. Great man. So he had someone there holding a crucifix, and he put me in a hypnotherapy trance. And basically, what the hypnotherapist does is get you really deeply relaxed, and you hypnotize yourself. Truly, that's what happens. And he walked me through this process and asked me to scan my body, and what did I see? And what I saw was really ugly and really horrible. And, you know, for years, actually, I could feel this thing that was inside me, because it would say things to me that I would never say to myself. Like, I'd be carrying a pair of scissors, and I'd hear, "Why don't you just fall on those? Why don't you stab your leg with those?" Well, you know, horrible things. And, you know, or hurt my children, which I would never do. And, you know, so I understand, you know, when murders happen and rapes happen and horrible things happen, that dark energies, demonics are involved. You know, humans are not meant to do those things, but there is dark energy.
Yes, I do agree with that. But I do, you know, just to be fair, because I know a few of the other shows that I have done, when it does come to some of those outrageous, heinous crimes that happen, you know, there is a real credit that needs to be given to the brain and activity of the brain, and, you know, the brain not activating, not being active in places it should, the brain being overactive in places where it should. So as much as I do believe, yes, in, you know, something can come over somebody to cause them to do something that they didn't want to do, I feel I also have to give respect to the scientific aspect of it, which is, you know, there is a real thing, and there is a real problem with either brain infection or just straight out mental illness.
I had those things, you know, saying, you know, nasty things to me. Did I act on them? No, I didn't. Mm-hmm. No, I didn't. But I will say, since those, you know, they were removed, my anger has dissipated a tremendous amount.
And you attribute that to what specifically do you attribute that to?
Well, that's a lot of personal work too. I've done a lot of energy work and a lot of healing, a lot of forgiveness, and, you know, that it's each thing that we do to help ourselves. We grow, evolve, we get better, we become, you know, the better version of ourselves. So I would say, you know, it's a bunch of different things, that not just one thing that helped me.
Jennifer, how long have you been a life coach for?
Since 2011.
Since 2011.
Mm-hmm,
okay.
Mm-hmm.
How many clients do you have to work with now?
Now I'm seeing, I'm probably about 15 different people. It's probably a little bit more than that. And then I'm doing telesummits as well, where I, you know, new people are coming in and finding out about me. And yes. it's like a radio show, you know, where there's listeners that get the chance to see and hear my work.
Do you, when you help any of your clients go through whatever it is they are going through, when they have a breakthrough, is that also like a breakthrough personally for you? Where does your satisfaction or gratification come from helping your clients?
Oh, every single day. Every day I get satisfaction from helping people. And, you know, whether it's a big breakthrough or just a small breakthrough, it's this type of work where I'm helping people have a better life and be happier, like a married couple that have been married for 22 years that have had tremendous challenges, and to have them both happier now than when they got married. I mean, it's really gratifying, intensely fulfilling.
What are the main problems that people come to you with when you start working with a client? Is there like something that is a big problem that more than one person comes to you with, or is every person in every situation just a different thing?
Well, I would say that the biggest issue for most people is codependency, where they expect their partner to give them all that they need, meet all their needs. And it's unreasonable to expect one person to be able to make us happy and fulfill us. We have got to do that for ourselves first. So I would say low self-esteem and codependency. And so when people have those issues, then they're not happy with themselves. They're not happy with their life. And so when I'm working with them, we work on building the self-esteem and teaching them how to take care of themselves, which it sounds strange, but a lot of people are very needy, you know, and they experience a breakup. So that's another thing that people come to me for. But they recognize that, you know, they're not healthy emotionally to feel such devastation if they are broken up with after just a matter of months. So, you know, it's low self-esteem, not being able to fill their cup up, to look for love outside of themselves. You know, there are several different things that go into that: perfectionism, people pleasing, enabling other people, not having healthy boundaries. All of those are aspects of low self-esteem.
Do you help more people that are in relationships, or do you help more people that are married? And the second part to that question is, do you, if it is someone in a relationship or a marriage, are you more so working with the couple, or are you working with one person within that marriage or relationship?
I do both. So one of the things I do is I help people find love. I've had people as far away as India come to me and say, I'm looking for love. I know you can help me. And I have helped people find love. I'm not a matchmaker. That's not what I do. But what I do is I clear the blocks. For example, this woman in India, she was about to have her father create an arranged marriage, and she wanted to marry for love. And so I told her to break up with her current boyfriend within 2 weeks because of the energy work I did. She met the guy she fell in love with, and I did energy clearings to help clear whatever was standing in the way between them. She was very needy, so I had to help her not reach out to him, allow him to come back to her. So oftentimes when we are codependent, we run after, women tend to do this more than men. Women tend to run after a guy chasing them rather than allowing the man to chase them. And men are the hunters. And so we have to allow men to do what they are meant to do. So I guide people in a lot of different ways, but I also work with married people. And yes, I work with them individually and together. And one of the couples I'm working with currently, he had an affair. There were a lot of things that happened that precipitated the affair, and she wanted him back, and I helped her get him back. And now we're working on, you know, the relationship, because for a marriage to fall apart, there's obviously issues, you know, being on autopilot.
Do you work with, in the example you just gave, the guy that had an affair and the wife left and now she's back, do you have counsel with both the husband and the wife now, or is it just still the wife you're talking to?
No, I'm working with both of them.
Both of them. Okay.
Yeah. So I see her individually and I see them together as a couple.
But you don't see him individually.
We're starting to do that now. Yes. I worked with her for about 6 months by herself. And then, you know, we finally get to the place where they're working on their relationship together. You know, relationships are tender and they take time. And
yes.
So, you know, that's what we're doing. Excuse me, working on the relationship with them, living separately.
So they don't live together again? I mean, they're not living together right now?
No.
Okay. So just for instance, what would your reaction be? What would you do, I guess, if it came to pass that while you were in your sessions with both the husband and wife and the wife, that he were to cheat again, how would that be handled?
Well, that is something that we are currently talking about, because I have asked her, how are you going to feel if this happens again? Do you trust him? And she's told me multiple times, I don't trust him. So that's definitely an issue. And I think they're doing remarkably well. Mm-hmm. You know, without pointing fingers, and there's a lot of forgiveness that had to happen for this couple to be able to work on getting back together.
Have you ever had a couple, a person, whatever, come to you, and they have just had so much scar tissue, or they have just have so much baggage that there is no possibility of help? Like, is it a real thing to you that there could sometimes be too much that has happened to repair, or do you believe any and everything is repairable?
I believe that anything and everything is repairable. And I'll give you a for instance. I had a client, this was probably about 6-7 years ago in Georgia. Mm-hmm. And she was a member of a family that practiced sacrificing children. And she
I'm sorry. No, you can't just skip over that real quickly. She was a part of a family here in the United States of America
in Canada. In Canada.
That's mm-hmm. Okay. So she was part of a family in Canada, and they believed in sacrificing children.
Yes, they were witches. Mm-hmm. Yep. And that's what they did. And so she was part of it. So you can imagine. And there's sexual molestation is a part of that. It was. You know, there's a lot of that type of thing happening today, and it's pretty dark and very heavy. But I worked with her. She was really a wreck when we first started working together. And she got to a place where she could have a relationship. She was married. But, you know, things start, what happens is the trauma, if it's not cleared, and we get to be in our late 40s and 50s, our health really starts to suffer. So we can't continue to ignore these things forever, because they will impact our health. You may end up with cancer. You may end up with, you know, terrible lung issues like COPD, not being able to breathe. There's a lot of things that can happen if you don't deal with this type of trauma. And so her health started to improve. Her communication with her husband started to improve. And, you know, things were starting to really bubble up for her. And I know that she's relating to others and the world in a very different way than she was when we first started working together.
Okay. So I promise you, I heard everything that you just said. So I don't want me going back to something that you said. I don't want you or my listeners to think I didn't hear what you just said. I absolutely heard every word that you just said right now.
Okay.
But when it comes to someone coming from a family that is known or is into sacrificing children, when I hear something like that, I apologize, but I do have a couple of questions about that. Number one, did she ever tell you where these children that were being sacrificed were coming from? And number two, did it ever dawn on you at all in your existence with this person to ever contact law enforcement?
Well, it's an interesting question, but no, I did not.
Okay. Was she telling you, did she tell you where the children were coming from?
They were abductees, like, you know, missing children.
Okay. So when you did a clearing for her, then her health started getting better and she started feeling better. Is that what you said?
No, I have to. Yes, I did say that. Now, I want to retract what I said, because I did say, you've given me this information. How can I not do anything about it? And she told me that if I was to pursue anything at all, that I would end up not alive. That because her family was still living, you know, because of who she was and all of the information that she had, that, you know, it was way too dangerous for either one of us to go after those people.
Oh, wow. Okay. Okay. So what is your relationship with her now today? Is she still in a better place? Is she okay?
Yes, she is. She's, you know, she's got good relationships with her children. They're, you know, grown adult girls and married, and she's pretty happy. I mean, you know, would I say that she is the same as you or I? No, but she's in a much better place. Better place. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is that, can you say professionally that is the most extreme situation you have dealt with? Or
Yes. Definitely
that is
the worst.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. How did that, and I'm sorry, Jennifer, I'm so sorry to harp on the situation, but how did that resonate with you? How did it affect you personally when you first started hearing about it, and even in working with someone like this?
Well, you know, you sort of wonder how much of this is true. You know, there's like a part of you that hopes that this is fantasy and not real, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it did have an impact on me. It did have an effect on me. And certainly this is not the type of client that I seek. This is not my perfect client. This was, I would say, outside the realm of what I would normally do. I mean, the people that I see today are people that are, you know, maybe needy, they're having codependency issues, that type of thing. That I almost regret bringing this one up, but this was, you know, the farthest outside, I would say. Definitely a life changer. And it did bring up a lot of the things for me again, you know, regurgitating my past, you know, because you think of a little child and little children and, you know, you hear about these things, but it's not where I want to live and breathe for sure.
Yeah. And how long ago did you work with this particular client?
Oh, that was back in Georgia, and I've lived in California. I lived in Colorado a year and California now for six. So that was seven or eight years ago.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you know, to close out the show, if you could tell my guests, if you can tell my listeners, give your description of your latest book, Orgasm for Life. What is that about, and how did that book come about for you?
Well, that book, I've been doing self-love for years. And, you know, I told you I get guidance, and I received this guidance to write a book about sex. And I questioned, I said, really? And the reason being is that when women have a lot of self-loathing and they hate themselves, they tend to not like sex. So I wrote this book so that women would understand themselves better. Men would understand women better, and women would understand men, because often women think of men as if they are inept women or incomplete women, which is not the case. You know, men and women are so vastly different. We're wired differently, and we're wired differently for a reason.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, so I wrote this book as it's a loving and fun way to look at each other and understand our partners better and to have better communication and better sex.
Do you have any way to have a pulse on your current readers of this book? And if so, do you have more women reading it? Have you heard from any men that have read it? What has the feedback been of this book so far for you?
Well, you know, men are more motivated by sex than women are. So I would say that the majority of my readers are men, although partners are reading the book, you know, men and women. And it has had great reviews, and men have come to me and said, you know, you're spot on here with my understanding of men. So I think it's a really great book for both men and women. If you want a better sex life, if you want a better relationship, you want a deeper connection and greater intimacy, it's a really good book to read. And I wrote it because, you know, with the sexual trauma I had and bringing that back around, I had issues with orgasm. And a lot of people do that have had trauma. Not all, but a lot of people do, because we have that fight, fright, or freeze mechanism, you know, and the trauma gets frozen in the body. And so I walk the reader through healing the trauma. So if you've had sexual trauma, it's a great book for you to read to heal that trauma within yourself.
And where can people find this book as well as Odyssey, From Victim to Victory?
They're both available on Amazon.
Okay. Is either book in any bookstore anywhere around the country?
Not yet. No. I think you have to sell a certain number before they do that. No. Not in the bookstores yet.
Okay. Well, where can, I mean, we have come to the end of our conversation, and it was a very good conversation. I enjoyed it. Where can my listeners find out more about you, and what do you have coming up in the near future?
Well, you could find me at jenniferelizabethmasters.com. And I have a couple of telesummits. If you sign up for my newsletter, I don't inundate you with newsletters, but my Facebook page is another way you could reach me, Jennifer Elizabeth Masters on Facebook or Instagram or even Twitter. And let's see, I've got a couple of telesummits that I'm going to be doing where I do a little talk, a little introduction. People get to see and feel what I do energetically when I'm doing coaching. And, you know, those things are available through Facebook and my newsletter.
Where can people, if someone wanted to watch your telesummit, they sign up, they go to JenniferElizabethMasters.com, and there's a registration form there?
Well, if you sign up for my newsletter, then you'll get the latest events that are happening, you know, each week through my newsletter.
Okay.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Well, I always ask my guests also what final thought they would like to leave my listeners with. So what would your final thought for my listeners be this evening?
That what, no matter what the past is, it doesn't define you. And we can always have happiness. It just takes some introspection and some consistent work on ourselves. So happiness can be yours no matter what trauma you've had in the past.
Well, thank you. Thank you very kindly for being here. And, you know, my last words, you know, they kind of echo what Jennifer just said. I've always been, if you've been one of the people that has listened to all my shows, you understand that I am really somebody that believes your past does not dictate your present or your future. I do this show. I go places to talk to people and inspire them to help them realize that every day can be a new day if you think of it that way. You don't have to feel guilty, or you don't have to be insecure because of something someone said to you yesterday or something that happened to you when you were a child and you're just not worthy. If you do put your honest mind to whatever it is you want to achieve, and you can open yourself up and you can accept the sacrifice that it will take to get to the top or to see whatever success it is you're trying to see, if you can allow all of that on your journey, then you absolutely will reap some very, very good rewards on the other side of that mountain. I thank you all very kindly for being with me this week. Next week, I don't know exactly what the guest situation is. I have an Uber special guest, not Uber like the driving company, but Uber in like German for great. I have a really great potential guest for next week. I'm just hoping, you know, her schedule does open up. If not, then I've got another guest that will be on next week. So I won't say anything about who it could possibly be. Just watch all of my social media. Make sure you all take care of yourselves and one another over this next week. Love yourselves, love your neighbors, and do it all with a smile on your face. I thank you all again for joining me. We are out. Are you inspired? Can I inspire you more? Come join me every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. on Station 2 here at BBS Radio. Let's get inspired together.
come join me. You'll be glad you did.